You're listening to Docs Outside the Box, episode 53.
Welcome to Docs Outside the Box podcast. This is your official show, looking inside the minds of cutting edge and innovative doctors. Think you'll find these stories in any medical textbook? Sorry. You're getting real life insight from men and women pushing the envelope beyond medicine. Ordinary doctors doing extraordinary things. Let's start now with your host, Dr. Nee Darko.
This episode is brought to you by Set for Life Insurance. Protect yourself against life setbacks with Set for Life Insurance. Set for Life Insurance gets you disability and life insurance at a reduced cost with their exclusive discounts. Now that's why I use them. Visit www.setforlifeinsurance.com and tell them Dr. Darko sent you. Welcome back to another episode of Docs Outside the Box. I am your host, Dr. Nee Darko, and I've got a great one for you. I am interviewing on this episode Farnoosh Torabi. That's right, Farnoosh Torabi, host of the Soul Money Podcast, is here joining us, teaching us everything about personal finance. I'm really excited to have her on the show. And for those who don't know, you got to be living under a rock. She is obviously one of the leading personal finance experts in the country. She is a speaker, TV personality, as well as author. And besides being the host of the Soul Money Podcast, and y'all need to be subscribed to that if you're not, she's also a frequent contributor on anything that's related to personal finance. She's on numerous news outlets like the Today Show, Good Morning America. She's in the Oprah Magazine. She done made it. She's in Oprah Magazine. She's been quoted in the Wall Street Journal. So it's a pretty long list. Besides all of that, she has also hosted her own show on CNBC called Follow the Leader. So it's pretty obvious that she's coming with a lot of expertise. She's bringing the heat. And I've been listening to her podcast just from the beginning. And back then, her podcast was 7 days a week. She was not playing. Talk about a crazy launch. And, I found her to be very relatable. I found her advice to be on point and actionable. And since those days when she was 7 days a week, I've kind of just followed her all the way to this point. And I just respect her hustle. I respect her hard work. And as a matter of fact, her teachings, her podcasts, her episodes really helped me and my wife get out of debt and get out of our situation, which was, in essence, $662,000 of student loan debt. And as a matter of fact, once we paid off our debt, we reached out to her and to her team and found out that they were interested in featuring our story. And that was literally, to go from listening to someone to actually being interviewed by them and telling them about your story, that really was a phenomenal feeling. And then from a podcaster being interviewed by another podcaster, her interview game is just on a different level. And it was really good to just see how someone who is an expert interviewer kind of take us through and tell a certain story. And I really, really got a lot from her and learned a lot also. So on this episode, you're going to hear about some of the important first steps that doctors need to do to get ahead. We even talked about the really touchy subject of, women nowadays are graduating from medical school more often. They are becoming physicians. They got six-figure salaries. But what happens when they date people who are not on the same financial station as them? One of the books that she authors is called When She Makes More. So we kind of talked about how to handle that weird situation. She also talks about situations where she thinks it's better to use robo-advisors. She talks about the XY Planning Network. She talks about a lot of different things related to personal finance and beyond. This is an episode that you definitely don't want to miss. If you have an opportunity, please go ahead and share this episode with other people. So without further ado, I present Farnoosh Torabi. Farnoosh Torabi, thank you for being on Docs Outside the Box. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Nee. It's a pleasure.
It's almost like a role reversal. A couple of weeks ago, I was on your show.
Yes, everybody, please listen to Nee and Renee on the show. It's so money. One of the best interviews I think we've had in a while. And I brag about it to a lot of people because I just think what you and Renee have conquered, your over $600,000 in debt, that's remarkable. And that's a story that we need to hear more and more.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm cheesing just by you even mentioning my name and mentioning my wife's name. I can't believe that I was on your show. We are still on cloud nine from that.
Aww.
And I mean, seriously, like we have been listening to you, you know, for the past 4 years. And, you know, it's amazing the relationship that you develop with, you know, a host on a podcast. And, you know, you grew up or you at least went to school in Central PA. You know, I work mm-hmm. in Central PA. And, you know, we had so many long drives where we listened to you and we got so much knowledge based off of you. And to actually take that and actually talk to you and then you're on my show, for me, it's a dream come true. So,
well, I'm just, I don't know what to say. I mean, you two are just the perfect sort of people that I like to promote and profile on this podcast because you are living inspirations and just own that, you know, you are. And I was just so lucky to be able to share your story with the audience and here I am on your show. Congrats on your podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you. This is a podcast where we are highlighting, you know, the amazing things that ordinary doctors are doing. But in order for us to get to that point, obviously we need a lot of financial runway, which you talk about a lot in your show. The personal finance aspect has to be, you know, really legit in order to get to that, you know, portion of your life where you're able to really, you know, take chances, do entrepreneurship and so forth. So that's why I really had you on the show so that we can talk about personal finance. We can talk about, you know, some other things that are related to personal finance from a social aspect. So I'm really excited to get started. And since you brought up your podcast is obviously a top financial podcast. You are the number one female hosted podcaster. You know, you're on TV. You're on talk shows. You're on the Today Show. I've seen you. You're on print. You're on electronic media. You have your own podcast, obviously. What is your favorite form of media to communicate with people?
Well, I love the podcast. If I didn't love it, I wouldn't be able to do it 3 times a week. Started out actually with 7 days a week.
I was with you all the time from back then. I was with you.
Wow. That's really impressive. We actually read a stat the other day that said people only have time to listen to maybe 4 or 5 episodes a week across a variety of podcasts. So the fact that you were able to listen to all of my shows, and even now with 3 days a week, I feel like I'm still maybe overdoing it because people only have so much time. No? Okay. I'll keep that pace. But you know, honestly, I love television so much. I got my first, experience in journalism, working behind the scenes as a producer. And then I got the opportunity to be on camera and I've hosted many shows. And I was just on Kelly and Ryan, live with Kelly and Ryan this week. And I think for me, TV, that live aspect, connecting with people in the audience, in person, that for me is unmatched. It's an unmatched experience. And also I think it challenges me more in ways that other media platforms don't, having to really think on my feet and connect and also, you know, get everything I need to say in 5 minutes. I came from a very theatrical background, stage, okay, directing, on stage, behind the scenes. And so for me, being on TV is the closest thing to that. And I think it's where I am my truest self in using all my senses. And I just love it. I think it's really fun and it challenges me. And so I hope that I get to do more of that. But, you know, it's the sort of thing that TV, there's only so many ways to get on TV, you know?
Right.
So I'm not putting all my eggs in that basket, but I am definitely active in that medium. But it's one of those things that doesn't actually pay a lot. So I don't bank on it, but I'm holding out still for that series that I get to do over and over again on TV. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know it's out there.
Well, you had CNBC's Follow the Leader. I was watching on that one.
Yes,
that was really good.
What a fun show. It lasted one season. And now I'm doing a similar kind of series, although not so active. I'm sitting down with incredible people for coffee on CNBC Prime, which is the digital platform at CNBC, cnbc.com. And we just interviewed Barbara Corcoran, lots of laughs, really casual conversations about money and leadership and her upbringing and when she sold her company for $66 million. And it's
That's
actually playing in cabs across the country. So, a reason maybe not to take Uber, jump in a yellow cab, you can watch us. And so that's been fun and I'm hoping to continue that. But yeah, just, I love it all, but TV is definitely where I think my truest self shines.
See, now you just mentioned Barbara Corcoran. Like, you get a chance to interview people from various walks of life, obviously some high achieving individuals, high earning individuals. Do you ever get intimidated by any of your guests?
Well, I think not intimidation, although in the beginning, certainly, I think with practice, with experience, with also maturing, I know that no matter how accomplished somebody is on paper and how, you know, how popular or of a household name they are, at the end of the day, they're just human beings. They have the same vulnerabilities. They have the same, you know, sort of like temperaments sometimes. I mean, they're just people. And yes, they've had an amazing career and they're everywhere. And so they almost seem larger than life. But my reminder to myself is that, you know, obviously I respect these people and I want to be mindful of like their busy schedules and I want to be respectful of their work and I want to do my research when I interview them. But honestly, like if they're going to give me attitude or be prima donnas, like I'm not going to take that personally. You know, I'm almost going to laugh at it and just kind of roll with it and just stay true to what my mission of my show is and what I hope. And I always think about the audience too. You know, it's not about them really. It's about the audience. They're coming on the show, yes, to be themselves, but really my goal as a host is to extract the most relevant and exciting and nuanced pieces of advice for the audience, because that's after all what we're here for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now whenever I hear about you talk about your life, in essence, in your 20s, working at, you know, at Money, working on, I believe you were working at CNBC at one point. That was a life where you were employed. Can you compare that life to your life now? Now, obviously, you're very successful now, but what I'm looking for is, what's it like being an entrepreneur, determining, you know, how much you make, eating what you kill? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think that for me, I don't think I was necessarily a born entrepreneur. I do think that some people who are entrepreneurs, it's in their DNA and they were the ones who were rebellious in school and for good reason, because they were not going to be following the traditional rules. They wanted to make their own rules and think they're always outside the box thinkers. And I was very much a rule book kind of girl. You know, I raised my hand in class, sat in the front row, did everything I was supposed to do. I walked a very straight path, and it wasn't until I got laid off in 2009 when I sort of had to, out of necessity, figure this whole self-employment thing out. And
that's during the economic depression also. Yes. That had to be really scary.
Yeah. I mean, literally everyone and their mother, I joked, was laid off, including my mom. We were both laid off.
We laugh now, but back then it's probably scary as all heck.
It is. It's very gut-wrenching, you know, when you are told you can't come back to work anymore and you're like, but wait, I was killing it here, you know, like, Oh, we were friends.
Yeah, nope. Security would be walking you out.
Yep. I got back to my desk after the meeting with HR and my whole account email BlackBerry had been, you know, deleted, and I was like,
are you serious?
Yeah, I was like, thanks for giving me no time to, you know, figure out my next steps here, but which I actually think was probably not the legally right move for them to make. I think they're supposed to give you like a little bit of time to, you know, deal with your belongings, but it was a rapid and it was a whirlwind. And although, you know, looking back, there was a voice in my head even before getting laid off that kept saying and kept nagging at this prospect of going out on your own, breaking out on your own, Farnoosh. Like, you can do it. You can do it. But I think, again, being me, someone who plays it safe, I kept ignoring that voice because I was afraid of what it would mean as far as income and the regularity of my income and health insurance. And I just, you know, it was for me a very uphill trajectory in my mind. I was thinking about just the negative. And, you know, it's all mindset. If you believe you can do it, you can do it. It's not that hard. It's not rocket science. I want to tell everybody that, you know, it's just logistics. You just got to like figure it out, talk to other people who are doing it, Google it. You'll figure out what you need and how to get it done. It's just a matter of believing in yourself and wanting to do it. And so I got the kick in the pants to leave my job, and I had no choice really but to pursue this entrepreneurial path. And I had some financial runway because even while working at the company that I was working at, for the last year, I had been doing some side hustling. I had been doing some speaking events, some brand partnerships. I've written a book. And so all that income had been just sitting in a bank account. And so I had the runway to be able to at least give myself the freedom to test drive this entrepreneurial path for a year. And if I hated it or was unfruitful, then look, I could have always gone back and applied for a job, I suppose. Although it was a tough time to be applying for work. There were no jobs.
Well, now, so, when you say runway also means FU money also, right? We're on the same page.
Yeah. Everyone needs some FU money.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Gosh. Whether you're in a bad relationship, a bad job, you hate your living, you know, if you hate where you live, you want to move, just to be like, you know what, I'm done and I'm leaving and I'm taking my money with me. And so, but your question is really about how my life is different and, or, you know, compared to when I worked for the man or the 9-to-5
right.
kind of format.
And can you ever go back? Like, there's no going back,
right? No way. I mean, I wouldn't make as much money. I'll be frank about that. No one's going to pay me as much as I'm paying myself.
Preach.
And yeah, and that's, I think, true. I mean, no one will ever pay you as much as you're willing to pay yourself in any industry. Then I think also that the variety of stuff that I get to do, podcasting, speaking, writing, all the things that we talked about earlier, there is not one kind of place that would let me be as diversified. And for me, I do think that I'm the kind of person who likes to flavor. I'm the kind of person who orders like six appetizers at a restaurant, like instead of the one meal. I like to just kind of nosh on a bunch of things. And
tapas.
Oh my gosh, tapas is it. Like, I could live in Spain for ever. And I think that
I bet you like the siesta also, huh?
Oh yes. Oh man. I mean, maybe I was like a Spanish person in my former life. I don't know, but I think that parallels in my career where I like to test. I just like to have a lot of variety. I like to take naps in the afternoon if I want to, or work out, or spend more time with my kids. I think that's the biggest gift that entrepreneurship has given me, is the flexibility in my day.
I love that.
As
answer.
A mom, yeah, as a mom, there is nothing more special than being able to spend time with your kids during the day, when they're at their best, not like just in the mornings or just before bed, which is what I think, unfortunately, what a lot of parents do, because they have to work during the week. And so they don't get to see their kids in the middle of the day, or go hang out with them at school, or go on field trips with them, or, you know what, play hooky and just go to the movies. My kids are too young for that, but I will be doing that with them at some point later. Mm-hmm. But I like that. Or, you know, just spending more time for myself. This morning I went and got breakfast, table for one, and did a little work, came back home. Now we're talking. After this, I'm going to go have lunch with a friend to talk about, you know, some potential work, working together.
Farnoosh, you're going to make all of my listeners who are employed right now quit their jobs, right?
Don't quit your day job if you don't have the runway and you don't have some momentum. I think that also, again, you know, was my situation. I had some momentum already in flow, and had some relationships established to be able to get. I felt good that the year wasn't going to be just me sitting on my couch.
Well, look, Farnoosh, I wanted to ask you about physicians and finances. So for physicians, obviously, we've spent almost close to a decade, maybe even longer than that, trying to be an expert on the human body. Obviously, there's no time to learn about finances. Can you give some advice on a good place to start for physicians who want to learn about finances, or in general, just want to take control of their finances? And the reason I ask that is, I know recently you actually used to work with a financial advisor, and then you left and entered the world of robo-advisors. So there are just so many different ways that, you know, people can start with their finances. What do you recommend?
Well, I think the first step is to recognize what areas of your financial life you need help with. And that may be, for some people, you know, they got the budgeting thing figured out, but they really need help with retirement, or they need help with budgeting and retirement, or they just don't even know where to put any of their money. They have some goals, but they're not really sure how to prioritize them. I think that if what's missing most from your financial life in terms of guidance is the investment quotient, you know, where do I park my money for the future? And you're pretty good at managing your monthly budget. I think in that case, a robo-advisor would suffice. And there are a number of them out there. I've actually recently partnered with Schwab for their intelligent portfolio. I have a portfolio there. I like Schwab because it's got this long history of managing people's money, and they have a massive library of stocks and mutual funds and assets from which you can invest in. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, you know, they've just been around the block for so long. They're a trusted name in the industry, but they're also, like so many other brokerages, offering an automated platform that is lower cost, that invests your money in a portfolio adjusted for your risk, and invests your money in things like ETFs that, again, are lower cost and more or less trail, you know, a particular sector and industry. And I think over the long run, that's the best bet. You know, you picking stocks.
That passive investing.
Yeah, passive investing. I like it mostly for the cost savings too, mm-hmm. because I did the math once, and this is why I left. And ultimately, my financial advisor was because I did the math, and I assessed how much I was paying, not just for the individual investments in the portfolio, but also the advisor's fee compounded. That was hundreds of thousands of dollars over a 30-year period.
It's crazy.
Crazy. That's like college tuition for my kids down the road. So I didn't think that was where my money was best spent anymore. I think in the beginning it was great working with an advisor because, going back to my initial thoughts about, you know, when you might want to work with a robo-advisor or a financial advisor. If you do need help with goal setting and prioritizing your money and other things too, like insurance I want to buy a house in 3 years. How do I get there? Or I need to build a wealth plan, or I want to create an estate plan. A financial advisor, I think, could be well worth the money. But even that said, I think that paying an advisor, you know, 1 to 1.5%, sometimes 2% of your portfolio is not necessarily the way you have to go. You can also work with people on a retainer basis. Mm. I would recommend xyplanningnetwork.com.
Yes, that's what I use. Yeah, that's where I found my current financial advisor.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like this network because, look, it's certified financial professionals. They've gone through all the same certifications as everybody else. They're high in demand, but they get that the current generation of investors, you and I, are not like, we're not coming to a wealth manager with millions in the bank yet. We want to get there, but we want to, you know, we want to work with somebody that understands our financial capacity right now, where we want to go, and work with us in such a way that makes sense for our budgets. So they may work with you on an hourly fee basis or a monthly retainer basis, or they'll just do a plan and not worry about like the annual repetitive fee yet. You know, so I find them to be extremely accommodating. You can find somebody who's within your geographic location, or, you know what, someone who's not, because a lot of times these folks work remotely. They'll work through Skype or Zoom meetings. And I think they're very much working to current needs of investors.
And the way in which you can even select which one to work with, it's like so granular. Like, you could even work with ones that work with a certain sexual orientation or work with a certain income. Like, it's just phenomenal. Like, because, you know, not everybody's message resonates with everybody. So I think it's phenomenal that they allow you to really select who you want to work with, why you want to work with them. That's amazing. I love them. Love them.
That's a great point. You're right. You can really get granular with the kind of people that you would work with, whether you're like a business owner or same-sex couple. Yeah, it's really, really great. And I've interviewed some folks from that network on my podcast. I've interviewed the co-founder, and they're great.
Hmm. I love them. Love them. Now, obviously, high income earners, we just mentioned before, don't spend much time studying stuff about finances, yet they have all this income potential or are already making that much money. What are some big mistakes that you see from maybe physicians or just in general, high income earners. Like, what are some pieces of advice you can give to them?
I would say that it's not about how much you make, but how much you pocket. So you could be all excited that you're making all this money, but how much are you really bringing home?
Right.
Are you so excited about how much you're making and then you're spending it all because now you feel like you can? And certainly you have more of a license and ability to spend because you're making more, but it's as important to be saving consciously and not just saving, but investing, not keeping too much of that income in cash, that you're keeping what you need for, let's say, 9 months as an emergency in a regular savings account. That's, you're not worried about interest there.
So not in a brokerage account. You're not trying to get any type of money off of it. Just
more of a liquidity thing, you know, like having access to that in the event that you need to take time off work or you're switching careers or whatever, like life happens, right? I don't need to share that. Everyone's been through something and knows that money, it's never a bad thing to have some money in the bank for a period of time. But anything else that you are looking to invest in down the road, whether that's you're hoping to reach retirement early or you want to buy a home or school for your kids, that money needs to be invested. Even if it's money that you don't know where you want to put it somewhere at least where it's making a little bit of money on interest. So you don't know what you want to do in the next year with this money, but you don't need it. So put it in a CD at least, or a high yielding checking account that is online where you can at least get 2%. And those accounts do exist. You can go to.
Pardon me, you getting 2%?
Well, yeah. In some cases, I'm not doing that. I like to just invest. You know, most of my money is in a brokerage account. Again, the Schwab Intelligent Portfolio, or it's sitting in checking. Gotcha. Because I have a lot of recurring expenses. I need to have a lot of liquidity, you know, month to month, running a business, running a household. And so it's, that's pretty much it. I should probably look into some CDs too, you know, because not all that money needs to probably be in checking. I could take my own advice, but I've seen it going to nerdwallet.com, bankrate.com. There are banks because if you have a higher deposit, like if you're going to give a bank 25 grand or more, and we're talking about higher earners here, so I'm going to use big numbers, they will reward you with a higher interest rate because they want that money.
That's a good
point. They want to, you know, so the more you park somewhere, the more you can earn in interest.
Mm. Love it. Love it. Now, this is a question that I've always wanted to ask you. You know, obviously with women, there are more and more women who are going into medical school. They're graduating from medical school, and obviously they're going to be making six figures. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be married. Obviously, they have to, you know, get out there and date or be in a serious relationship. What is your advice for women who are making six figures or even higher salaries and their mates don't necessarily make that same amount, right? Because you wrote that book, When She Makes More. What's the best way for women to handle that type of situation? Because that could be pretty, that could be a pretty hairy situation.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that's why I wrote the book. It's, I don't want it.
I mean,
to be,
I don't have a problem
anymore
with it, you know, but I heard my friend may have had a problem.
Yeah. You know what? I think the most important thing to do in the beginning is to just call it out. Just say, you know, hey, you know, I mean, not maybe the first date, obviously, but as things evolve and you get more intimate, and I know money is something that sometimes is totally off the table until you like get married. It's just one of the things that sometimes people don't want to talk about. But I think when you have that really interesting dynamic of she making more, even if you think you're so progressive and you're both very open-minded, at the end of the day, part of you might be, I'm speaking on the behalf of the guy here, he may feel a little insecure or uncertain about his role in the relationship if he's not making as much or more. And she may also feel like, she may make a lot of assumptions too about like what this is going to necessarily mean for the relationship and her role. And I think it's just important to just address it in the beginning and say, you know what, let's just put all of our cards out on the table. And as you're, you know, this is a great conversation to have if you're going to be maybe moving in together or buying something big together. Whenever a financial situation comes up, just say, you know what, let's also talk about the fact about how we have this income gap. And why are you laughing?
No, I mean, it's just one of those things where I can imagine that conversation coming up and then, like, you know, hands start ringing, wrists, you know, you're just like getting sweaty and stuff. It's
look, it's going to happen. And that's the thing.
Right.
You're
right.
If you don't have this conversation, then all that anxiety is still going to be there, except you're just not talking about it. And it's going to blow up. And it's going to, at that point, just be really hard to pick up the pieces.
So grab by the horns, so, handle it.
Yeah. Put on your big girl panties and your big boy boxers and talk about this. Because if you really want to win it, if you're in it to win it, you got to have this conversation. And it's not about threatening each other or being like feeling like your money. Just sort of take the incomes off the table for a second and just kind of talk about what you want your roles to be in the relationship. Because the fact is, even though she might be making more, she may not enjoy it. She, you know, and I feel like as much as I want women out there to feel really empowered by their financial abilities and their income and to know their worth and to go out there and make as much as they can, sometimes you truthfully, at the end of the day, you just want to have someone who has income parity with you, because that for you makes you feel more secure. And if that's how you feel, talk about it. Mm-hmm. Talk about how your incomes are making you feel and how your incomes together in this relationship are making you feel. And don't worry about political correctness. Don't worry about maybe saying something that will sound you know, patriarchal or dated or whatever. Just speak your mind, speak from the heart, and know that you're not alone. And if you want to use me as a way to get into the conversation, be like, so my girlfriend's reading this book called When She Makes More, and she's having some issues in her relationship because her man is upset that he is not making as much and he feels sort of like he's not able to provide. And I mean, I don't think that's an issue for us, but let's talk about it. What do you think? Gotcha. You know, I think always having a point of reference can always help to ease the tension around a topic that may otherwise be hard to talk about.
I love it. Love the answer. Love the answer. Here's a quote that I want to submit to you, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. Now, I know you used that recently at your graduation speech at Penn State. I want to know why you decided to use that. And can you talk about that in regards to this audience? And the reason I bring that up is I think oftentimes physicians are chasing success, but that may not necessarily equate to fulfillment. So,
yes. Well, I wanted to bring that up specifically because I remembered myself in that very seat at graduation at Penn State thinking that all I wanted to be was just successful. And my definition of successful, I think, was very limited. And it was just sort of like, you know, go to this school, get this job, buy this house. You know, it was very traditional and very limiting. And I don't think I was ever really factoring in, well, how about accomplishing the things that would make me feel happy and make me feel like I have a purpose and that I'm making an impact and that I'm fulfilled. And it was almost as if that didn't even matter, because it wasn't about me. It was about other people. It was about making my mom happy. It was about making an impression. It was about making my school proud. It was never about me. And my whole, what I've learned, if I've learned anything over the last, since graduating many years ago, is that you're the most important person in your life. I mean, that sounds selfish, but if you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of anybody else.
Anybody.
If you're not whole, nobody else is. If I'm having a bad day, my kids are going to have a bad day. That's going to react. I'm going to react that way to them. And so I wanted them to get that message early on, because I don't think you get that really directly. You kind of learn it, but it's not like a message in a fortune cookie or even any message you're getting in school. It's that really put yourself first and use this time in your life now that you're graduating to really find, to soul search and give back and be a giver and do the things that you feel will make you feel good. And if that you do find some of that in your occupation, fantastic, but your job is not everything. Although we work our jobs all the time and we feel like there's no time left for family and friends and sleep, but make time for that. And that, you know, your definition of success should include your ability to feel fulfilled and do things that make you happy. And that may seem very simple of a piece of advice, but it's often that we reach 25, 26, 30 and we feel unfulfilled. Mid-quarter life crisis, right?
Oh,
what's that about?
Burnout.
Regretting all our life's decisions. We're not in a happy relationship. We hate our boss. We look at ourselves and we're like, how did I get here? And I think that's because we failed to really listen to ourselves. And I mean, I joked years ago when I had friends who would like take a year off after college to go and travel the world and find themselves. I'm like, okay, good luck with that. Meantime, that was probably the best thing they could have been doing.
Right. Yep.
I didn't appreciate that. I was like, well, they're being irresponsible, you know? And I think that's a luxury to be able to like travel and not have to work, but that's an extreme. I think that if somehow in your life as a working, if there's a way to reserve time for yourself, whether that's just like, you know, just being good to yourself and exploring, trying new things. My brother, I use him as an example. He and I are 11 years apart. He's younger than I am. And I see that he, you know, reached a place in his early 20s where he was feeling unfulfilled and lost a little bit, even though on paper, you know, he went to a great school. He had a good job. He seemed like he was successful for his age, but he was like, really? Like, I thought there was going to be more excitement at this point in my life. Like, I thought I was going to feel more engaged and fulfilled and happy. And how did he overcome that? He started to just challenge himself more, started to try new things, took a photography class, learned how to code because he was like, I want to maybe build something of my own one day and I want to extend my skill set. He started to put himself more out there, dating more, traveling more consciously, like actually building travel into his yearly schedule as opposed to like a last minute thing.
Right.
And I think 5 years later, he's way more at peace with himself. He knows himself better. He is better at accepting failure. He's better at now he's an entrepreneur too. He quit his job and never looked back. I mean, he was kind of worried about it, but he's like, you know what? I feel ready for it.
Was this the job at Petrolicious?
Well, he left Petrolicious. Wow, you really know a lot about my family. It's the podcast. What can I say?
It's the podcast, yeah.
Petrolicious, then he went to work for, I think he was freelancing for a bit. Then he landed a great job at Huge, which is a digital marketing agency working on huge accounts in UX design. Then was building a lot of momentum there, but you know, was like, I'm done. Like, I don't really see a future for me here. And he had been working on some side projects, other clients on the side, building a lot of momentum there. And he was like, you know what? I'm gonna do this now. Cause if I don't do this now, when I'm married and have kids, that seems like a less likely time that I will feel be able to take this sort of risk. You know, I want to do this now when I have less to lose. Yeah. So I'm really proud of him.
Yeah. I really love the answers that you gave because in essence, that's the genesis of this show. The show started because I felt as though, you know, once I reached the pinnacle, which was graduating from medical school and actually, you know, becoming a surgeon, there was this thought in my head, like, is this it? Like every 4 years I was going to a different school or going to a different state, like that just stopped. So what was my next challenge? And that's when I decided, well, I love talking to people. I love networking with people and I love podcasts. Your podcast was an inspiration for me to start one. And in essence, the whole concept of just being successful but not having fulfillment was the reason why I wanted to tell these stories of doctors who not only are successful but are also fulfilled. So that's the genesis of Docs Outside the Box.
I don't know how you have the time between working as a physician, being a dad, you run multiple businesses. I mean,
you know, I'm working right now, actually.
You're working right now?
Yeah, I'm at work. I'm in the office right now.
should I be quieter?
No, you're fine. I have my headphones on. I have someone covering for me right now. But I mean, just that leads to my next question. Like, how do you handle all of this success and how do you balance that? Because, you know, as an entrepreneur, like there's no boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. Or do you create one? I mean, you are so successful and, you know, you extending yourself out to other people really is a big deal in terms of how much you make and so forth. Like, how do you balance all this?
I don't think I really think of it as balancing. I know my priorities. I feel as though I have a good foundation about what I know is important and what I need to have figured out. Like I, at least when it comes to money too, all my money immediately goes to the stuff that's boring, but needs to get done, you know? So college savings, the mortgage, all that stuff that isn't, you know, stuff I'm Instagramming, but it needs to get done. And I have a great husband who understands that my workflow can be inconsistent and that some days I'm gone all day and some days I'm just home all the time. And he's really our rock because, and I think if there's any advice too to women who will be having very kind of erratic careers and making more than their husbands or partners, is that you want to find ultimately not yourself in a partner. You don't want to clone yourself in your partner. You want to find someone that's going to compliment you. Mm-hmm. Right. In terms of not just personality, but you know, if you're somebody who's all about your career, I don't know if another person who's all about his or her career plus then kids can really thrive. You'd need a lot of support and a lot of understanding because ultimately there is going to be some give and take. And if you're someone who just wants to take, right. Who's going to give? And right. Both of you want to take, and who's going to give? You want to take in your career, then you know your home life's going to suffer. And so I think we have figured out between the two of us a rhythm that he never makes me feel like bad or guilty. Not that. How do I explain this? Like I never leave the home feeling guilty about leaving the house. Mm-hmm, and that's, and I don't think it's, and so whether that's because my husband's just so cool or I don't think that a lot of moms can say that. I don't think a lot of parents can say that. I think the mom guilt is a real thing for any working mom, no matter how much you work or how little you work. Like when you leave the house, you sort of feel like, oh, I'm neglecting. But I never feel that way because I have such trust and confidence in my husband. He supports me. He knows that I also pick the projects that are meaningful and I don't do everything because not everything has the same kind of return for me that it did 20 years ago or 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't do every media appearance. I don't do every trip. I don't do every speech. I don't do every partnership because I don't have as much time, but also because if I am going to invest my time in something, it better be really worthwhile. Right. I actually just wrote a piece for Money Magazine. It's online. You can read it. It's called How Becoming a Mom Has Made Me Richer. Mm. And I outline some of the ways that I make decisions in my career because I do want to spend more time at home. I want to be more present and I really respect my home life and my relationship with my husband. So I therefore have to be a little bit more selective in what I do in my career. But that said, that hasn't slowed me down. It hasn't made me earn less. Ironically, it's actually increased my income. It's increased the level of quality of work that I do. And it may also be that I'm older now and I've planted some seeds and they're sprouting. But I also think that there is something to be said about becoming a parent and suddenly you're priorities become right. Crystal clear.
Oh yeah, right? I agree with you on that one.
You're it's easier for you to say no. You say no with conviction as opposed to apology.
And it's just one sentence, no.
And it's just one word. You're unapologetic about declining things. You're appreciative, but you're like no because you know, and then you're much better at spotting opportunities too. So I think, you know, as far as balance goes, I don't think it's really a perfect balance or harmony, but it's working for us for now. And we're also really mindful of the fact that we need to, we've had so many conversations about my career and the fact that it could go anywhere that we're ready for the unexpected. You know, we're good at taking risks. We're good at taking calculated risks. And yeah, so that helps. I think having an ongoing conversation with your partner about the what ifs is a good way to mentally prepare yourself for them if they ever happen.
Oh, love it.
And so that's my short end of it, short answer.
Now, if you could do this all over again, if you had the opportunity to kind of hit the reset button on your career, would you do anything different?
Yeah, I would. I would be more engaged on social media and my newsletter. I really I feel like I'm just an in-person kind of gal. Like, I like to meet people. I like to connect with them voice to voice, at least. So the podcast is great. But
you're so busy. I mean, you have so many things going on. How can you be? Wow.
I am. And I've tried to hire people to kind of work in on those projects and like do my social media and do my newsletter. But I just feel like they don't, no matter how great of writers they are, it's really hard to capture the essence of me. And also, I just, you know, it's like, I can't be everywhere all the time. And I've gotten to be okay with that. Yeah, maybe I'm leaving some opportunities on the table and I'm not connecting with as many people that way. But I don't know. I have so much to be grateful for and thankful for, and people do find me. So it's not, I am, you know, I'm doing what I can. But I do think that I could have started to just engage more and better on through my website. You know, I kind of thought of the website as like an afterthought, like, oh, it's just a place for people to find me so they can maybe email me or read a couple blog posts. But I look at some of my colleagues who have extensive lists and, you know, yeah. Oh, how big is your list? It's like, shut up. But yeah. I do think that then it would have been easier for me to just share my work and get my messages out quicker. And so I'm working on it, but it's a slow burn.
Love it. Love it. I love that answer. Because I think sometimes we think that the people that we listen to or the people that we, you know, really look up to have everything like in line, like everything's perfect. And no. I really appreciate you kind of sharing that, like you're getting it together as you make it happen as it happens, you know? So
I would love everyone to follow me on Instagram though, because I have kind of identified that as my social media du jour. I love it now because at first I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to do all these stories, it's time consuming, but I feel like I'm in a good rhythm with that and it's not taking away from my family life, which was what I was most worried about. I'm like, I'm busy enough as it is. I can't be snapping pictures of my dinner and, you know, but it's fun and people are engaged and we're communicating quickly on Instagram with people. I have found co-hosts for my podcast through Instagram. And it's, by the way, if you're interested in co-hosting with me on a Friday episode, get in touch. But it's just, I find that it's just a happy place where Facebook can be kind of, yeah, I'm so serious. I feel like Facebook can be a little too alienating or political or negative. And then, but Instagram is just kind of more of a, you know, it's a happy place for now.
Now I'm gonna take a moment, if you will allow, for me to steal something from your show, because you asked so many people these questions, and I always wanted to ask you, if you had $100 million, Farnoosh, what would you do with it?
I would give half of it away. I don't need $100 million. I don't know what I would do. I would give it away to like the you know, to children's organizations, to refugee organizations, like a lot of the, I guess, you know, I'd give it to, gosh, like my family who need, maybe, I don't know. I just feel like in my hand, I don't really need it. I could 50 million is plenty for me. Plenty for anybody.
So you wouldn't put in your coffin, basically.
Yeah. You know, Rachel Ray, I don't know if she still does this, but she's obviously someone that I idolize because she's built such a huge brand and, I mean, incredible. But I think I heard her say once that when she gets her paycheck, she just gives half of it away. And for her, she's really passionate about animal organizations. So that's because she's like, what do I need? I don't need all this money. I'm grateful that they give it to me, but I don't need it. Really. But others need it more than me. So if I'm in a position to make more like that, I'm going to do something powerful with it. So that's what I would do.
Okay. I'm Farnoosh Torabi and I'm so money because. Boom.
Oh my gosh. I'm Farnoosh Torabi. I'm so money because I'm obsessed with helping other people become so money.
I love it. I love it. Farnoosh, this was amazing. This seriously is a dream come true for me. I really, really appreciate you being on the show. You really, I don't know if you can really understand how much this means to me to have you on the show talking about personal finance and talking about my story and you talking about your story. It really is an honor to have you on the show. You know, for the audience, I just want them to understand that if you ever want to get started, you know, there's no time but to start right now. I just put out a feeler I thought, you know, Farnoosh was not going to pay attention, but I put it out there. So you are definitely serious about looking for co-host. But ultimately, I just want to acknowledge you for what you're doing. You're helping so many people. And I know it's really hard to be aware of, you know, how many people you're helping, but it's just, you know, you just never know who you're touching, and you've helped us change and turn our lives around. And I just want to say thank you very much. I applaud what you're doing, and I can't wait to see all the amazing things you're going to do in the future.
Thank you. And likewise, please send my best to Renee and your little one, and let's stay in touch, everybody.
Once again, I got to thank Farnoosh Torabi for coming down and chilling with me on Docs Outside the Box. Really had a good time interviewing her. Really appreciated her getting real, as well as dropping all this knowledge for you all to get on the right steps with your finances. So listen, if you want to learn more about Farnoosh, if you want to continue to follow her, just go to my show notes page. Just go to www.docsotb.com and click on this episode. And in the show notes on the bottom, you'll see all the different links that you can follow Farnoosh. You can get in touch with Farnoosh. I'm letting you know she's really serious about looking for co-hosts. So please make sure you follow her on IG at Farnoosh Torabi. So listen, I'm going to catch you guys on the next episode. But remember one thing, we only got one life. Let's make it count and live outside the box. Peace.